Good morning and welcome to chapel. My name is Deanna Durham and I teach in the Department of Applied Social Sciences. And I am so delighted to have Dr. Mary Helen Washington with us today. She was born and raised in Cleveland, Ohio. In 1975, she was appointed Director of Black Studies at the University of Detroit. In addition to the University of Detroit, she's taught at St. John College of Cleveland, Harvard University, Wellesley College, Mills College, the University of Massachusetts, Boston, and she is currently Professor of English at the University of Maryland, College Park. She's a personal friend and mentor of mine. We've known each other for more than 20 years. We've walked many miles together, traveled together in Cuba, Guatemala, and El Salvador, and she has shared her wonderful great-niece and nephews from Cleveland with us over the past four summers at our farm. Our conversations always weave together current events, race, gender, religion, and politics, accompanied by good food and special desserts that she brings us from her favorite bakery in DC. She loves to travel, write, and teach. She keeps me on my toes with suggestions for new books and films. She has given her life's work to scholarship in the area of African American literature and recently published this new book, The Other Blacklist, The African American Literary and Cultural Left of the 1950s. And if you're interested in this book, join us in the coffee house and there'll be some there for you to browse through and purchase if you'd like. She's a lifelong learner and I don't think there's ever a dull moment in her life. This morning's talk, Swept Away, An Adventure Tale for Millennials, is sure to engage you. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Mary Helen Washington.
Ever since Deanna talked me into giving a chapel talk, I have been talking with a friend now for several weeks about this talk, and both of us have wondered what part of our experiences as middle-aged women would speak to you, the millennial generation. What would you find relevant in our lives? As we thought back over our many years in school, we tried to answer this question, a question we thought might resonate with you. Who and what had helped us to become learners? And not just learners, self-confident learners. It was a hard task. Neither one of us had learned to become a self-confident learner in school. We did not get that from teachers or from institutions of learning. Even when we got good grades, we felt that we had not learned to feel confident as learners. As women, as black women, as women from working class families, we had learned to doubt our abilities as learners. But we felt that we eventually had developed that confidence. So the question I've been trying to answer over these past few weeks is, where did that sense of self-confidence come from? I want to offer you two schoolroom scenes. One from the fourth grade when I was about 9 years old, and a totally unself-conscious and self-confident student. And the second from graduate school, when I had learned the lessons of self-doubt. I was in the fourth grade at St. Thomas Aquinas School in Cleveland, Ohio, when my best fourth grade girlfriend and I decided that we would start a newspaper, which we called after the school, the Thomaquin News. I remember that we worked all summer on it, that my friend's father, who was an attorney, had his secretary type it up, that we took pictures of ourselves as reporters and editors, gathering news, putting out our newspaper, and that we distributed very proudly our four-page, hand-stapled, mimeographed newspaper to all the kids not only in the fourth grade, but throughout the school, and that our paper promptly disappeared from history. But where did two little black girls in a school where there were probably only 10 black kids out of 1,000, a school run by white priests and nuns, get the audacity to think that we could publish what is still the school's first and only newspaper? It is such an amazement to me that sometimes I think I only dreamed it. It didn't take long to lose that fourth grade girl confidence. And now I want to ask you to think back with me to a scene from my life in graduate school. This is sometime around 1969. It's my second year in the PhD program at the University of Detroit. Now remember, 1969 is 2 years after the 1967 riots in Detroit. And the university had discovered that, yes, there are black people in Detroit, and yes, black people do write books, and yes, some people might even want to study in that field. So that year, the university hired a woman named Dolores Minor to teach what became its very first course on African American literature. And I remember very well holding in my hand that September a hardback edition of a book of short stories by Charles Chestnut called The Wife of His Youth, published in 1901, a book I still treasure. At age 27, with almost 3 advanced degrees in literature, I had never read a book by a black author. But by the early 1970s, publishers had gotten wind of this great interest in black studies and had begun to publish new black authors and to reprint old ones at an unbelievable pace. Literally, I would walk into the library and the shelves of black books there seemed to just expand overnight. For me, reading Chestnut changed everything. I went in to see the chair of the department that semester, and I informed him that I would not continue my graduate studies unless I could specialize in African American literature. Well, the times were right, and he agreed, and the department hired 2 faculty I could study under, and I took my exams in the field, wrote my dissertation on black women writers, Toni Morrison, Alice Walker, Paul Marshall, and Gwendolyn Brooks, and I've now been a teacher and writer of African American literary studies for about 40 years, actually a little over 40 years. Here I want to introduce to you the term that I think embodies what happened to me in both of those experiences, fourth grade and graduate school. But before I do that, I want to back up and investigate the term that my term is going to supplant. In 2013, the woman who is the chief operating officer of Facebook, one of Fortune's top 50 women in the world, and rich beyond any of our imaginings, published a book, which is now a bestseller, in which she cautioned women who wanted to get ahead to lean in. And by that, she meant that women should give more time, energy, and effort to their jobs, should make themselves critical to the workplace, should focus on getting leadership roles, achieving higher positions in their companies, go all out for promotions and raises, and instead of sitting on the sidelines, they should proudly take a seat at the table. They should lean in, not lean out. All of which sounded like a good idea. I'm sure you've heard of this term, lean in. I understand that there are even lean in groups that have formed all over the country. One woman, a professor at Georgetown University, said she actually tried it. Quote, I stopped turning down invitations to speak at conferences in inconveniently far off places. I accepted every media request. I promised to write articles and reports and books. And just as Sheryl Sandberg promised, the rewards of leaning in quickly became evident. She said, "My confident, assertive, yet non-threatening feminine charm helped me rapidly expand both my business and social networks." She finally decided, however, to stop leaning in because it was killing her. Now, I think that on principle, we should be very careful of any advice coming from rich corporate heads. Thank you. But what strikes me as even more disturbing than the corporate profits piling up on the backs of all these leaning women is the way we have allowed the latent meanings of that metaphor to go unexamined. Shouldn't we be very worried about any metaphor that encourages women to bend themselves into any position, especially if it implies bending towards a male-dominated corporate interest? Or in fact, and this is for men and women, bending towards anything outside of ourselves. And of course, we should be highly skeptical about a metaphor which implies that the problems of injustice in the corporate world should be laid at the failure of women to work hard enough. Check out the root meanings of the word leaning. A person who is leaning is off balance. The dictionary says it means a tendency or a partiality of a particular kind, as in having liberal leanings. It's a tendency, a proclivity, a penchant, words that convey fluctuation, wavering, indecision, and a lack of a strongly felt commitment, not a full embrace of a position or an idea. So I want to think about replacing the term leaning in with the one I think applies to my own life. And I want to suggest not that you embrace mine, but that you think about and come up with a metaphor for yourself. The term I've chosen, not lean in, but swept away. In those two examples of extraordinary change in my life, I was swept away by something within me, something that made me so excited, so passionate, so worked up that I was ready and willing to become immersed in that work, to find new ideas, to work my butt off, to risk failure and disapproval. I was focused, and so focused that my imagination seemed boundless. Unlike the mantra of lean in, I was not trying to please a boss, to get a raise or a promotion, to make myself indispensable, or to get someone's approval. The movement was from within. And it was not the swept away that you think of in connection with romantic love. That too is leaning towards someone else. My metaphor is about what happened to me from the inside because of something that was there waiting to be released. If leaning throws you off your own balance, being swept away implies riding the wave of your own desires and talents. I know people who have been swept away. I have a good friend who's been swept away by her love of animals. She volunteers at a wolf sanctuary, rescues cats in the neighborhood, gets them adopted, raises beautiful animals in her home. She is now training to be a protester in St. Louis to keep alive the spirit of resisting police injustice. Another friend and a former student of mine recently landed a great job with a major university. And when I heard her give her job talk, I heard a woman swept away by her love of the intellectual life, knowing that she, as a young Black woman intellectual, can transform her field. I have friends who volunteer at the U.S.-Mexico border to make sure that people coming across the border are treated with justice. They too are swept away by something within themselves that makes them fight for justice. As I think you can hear, what runs through all of these stories is that these people have been prepared for and are open to being swept away. Being swept away implies commitment, preparation, inspiration, love, involvement, reflection. And that is finally what I have discovered over the past weeks. It's what creates a self-confident learner. Being open to that passion, that commitment, that depth of reflection, that comes first. Self-confidence follows. So I leave you with two tasks. First, to be skeptical of any corporation bearing news of your liberation. And second, to become involved in creating your own metaphors. Metaphors are the way we feel our way into our own lives. Metaphors are the way we create our own meanings, the way we get beyond the actual world and even beyond our logical minds so that we can see with the imagination and the heart. Thank you.
Inasmuch as the Spirit of God is that which inspires us and undergirds us and guides us in being swept away, we can say thanks be to God as well. Thank you.